you broke my heart, broke it in two. Some days I just don't know what I'm supposed to do. And when I see you, trouble and fall behind. You made me cry. They'll say that it gets better with the passing of the years. But when I think of you, trouble ain't far
So I'm putting forward a specific set of proposals based on the work of Joe's task force. And in the days ahead, I intend to use whatever weight this office holds to make them a reality. Because while there is no law or set of laws that can prevent every senseless act of violence completely, no piece of legislation that will prevent every tragedy, every act of evil, if there is even one thing we can do to reduce this violence, if there's even one life that can be saved, then we've got an obligation to try. And I'm going to do my part. As soon as I'm finished speaking here, I will sit at that desk and I will sign a directive giving law enforcement, schools, mental health professionals, and the public health community some of the tools they need to help reduce gun violence. We will make it easier to keep guns out of the hands of criminals by strengthening the background check system. We will help schools hire more resource officers if they want them and develop emergency preparedness plans. We will make sure mental health professionals know their options for reporting threats of violence, even as we acknowledge that someone with a mental illness is far more likely to be a victim of violent crime than the perpetrator. And while year after year, those who oppose even modest gun safety measures have threatened to defund scientific or medical research into the causes of gun violence, I will direct the Centers for Disease Control to go ahead and study the best ways to reduce it. And Congress should fund research into the effects that violent video games have on young minds. We don't benefit from ignorance. We don't benefit from not knowing the science of this epidemic of violence. Now, these are a few of the 23 executive actions that I'm announcing today. But as important as these steps are, they are in no way a substitute for action for members of Congress. To make a real and lasting difference, Congress too must act. And Congress must act soon. And I'm calling on Congress to pass some very specific proposals right away. First, it's time for Congress to require a universal background check for anyone trying to buy a gun. The law already requires licensed gun dealers to run background checks, and over the last 14 years, that's kept 1.5 million of the wrong people from getting their hands on a gun. But it's hard to enforce that law when as many as 40% of all gun purchases are conducted without a background check. That's not safe. That's not smart. It's not fair to responsible gun buyers or sellers. If you want to buy a gun, whether it's from a licensed dealer or a private seller, you should at least have to show you are not a felon or somebody legally prohibited from buying one. This is common sense. And an overwhelming majority of Americans agree with us on the need for universal background checks, including more than 70% of the National Rifle Association's members, according to one survey. So there's no reason we can't do this. Second, Congress should restore a ban on military-style assault weapons and a 10-round limit for magazines. The type of assault rifle used in Aurora, for example, when paired with high-capacity magazines, has one purpose: to pump out as many bullets as possible as quickly as possible, to do as much damage, using bullets often designed to inflict maximum damage. And that's what allowed the gunman in Aurora to shoot 70 people. 70 people, killing 12 in a matter of minutes. Weapons designed for the theater of war have no place in a movie theater. A majority of Americans agree with us on this. And by the way, so did Ronald Reagan, one of the staunchest defenders of the Second Amendment, who wrote to Congress in 1994 urging them, this is Ronald Reagan speaking, urging them to listen to the American public and to the law enforcement community and support a ban on the further manufacture of military-style assault weapons. And finally, Congress needs to help rather than hinder law enforcement as it does its job. We should get tougher on people who buy guns with the express purpose of turning around and selling them to criminals. And we should severely punish anybody who helps them do this. Since Congress hasn't confirmed a director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in 6 years, they should confirm Todd Jones, who has been acting, and I will be nominating for the post. And at a time when budget cuts are forcing many communities to reduce their police force, we should put more cops back on the job and back on our streets. Now, let me be absolutely clear. Like most Americans, I believe the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right to bear arms. I respect our strong tradition of gun ownership and the rights of hunters and sportsmen. There are millions of responsible, law-abiding gun owners in America who cherish their right to bear arms for hunting or sport or protection or collection. I also believe most gun owners agree that we can respect the Second Amendment while keeping an irresponsible, law-breaking few from inflicting harm on a massive scale. I believe most of them agree that if America worked harder to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, there would be fewer atrocities like the one that occurred in Newtown. That's what these reforms are designed to do. They're common sense measures. They have the support of the majority of the American people. And yet, that doesn't mean any of this is going to be easy to enact or implement. If it were, we'd already have universal background checks. The ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines never would have been allowed to expire. More of our fellow Americans might still be alive, celebrating birthdays and anniversaries and graduations. This will be difficult. There will be pundits and politicians and special interest lobbyists publicly warning of a tyrannical, all-out assault on liberty. Not because that's true, but because they want to gin up fear or higher ratings or revenue for themselves. And behind the scenes, they'll do everything they can to block any common sense reform and make sure nothing changes whatsoever. The only way we will be able to change is if their audience, their constituents, their membership says this time must be different. That this time we must do something to protect our communities and our kids. I will put everything I've got into this, and so will Joe. But I tell you, the only way we can change is if the American people demand it. And by the way, that doesn't just mean from certain parts of the country. We're going to need voices in those areas, in those congressional districts where the tradition of gun ownership is strong to speak up and to say this is important. It can't just be the usual suspects. We have to examine ourselves and our hearts and ask ourselves what is important. This will not happen unless the American people demand it. If parents and teachers, police officers and pastors, if hunters and sportsmen, if responsible gun owners, if Americans of every background stand up and say, enough, we've suffered too much pain and care too much about our children to allow this to continue, then change will come. That's what it's going to take. You know, in the letter that Julia wrote me, she said, I know that laws have to be passed by Congress, but I beg you to try very hard. Julia, I will try very hard. But she's right. The most important changes we can make depend on congressional action. They need to bring these proposals up for a vote, and the American people need to make sure that they do. Get them on record. Ask your member of Congress if they support universal background checks to keep guns out of the wrong hands. Ask them if they support renewing a ban on military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And if they say no, ask them why not. Ask them what's more important. Doing whatever it takes to get an A grade from the gun lobby that funds their campaigns, or giving parents some peace of mind when they drop their child off for first grade. This is the land of the free, and it always will be. As Americans, we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights that no man or government can take away from us. But we've also long recognized, as our founders recognized, that with rights come responsibilities. Along with our freedom to live our lives as we will, comes an obligation to allow others to do the same. We don't live in isolation. We live in a society, a government of and by and for the people. We are responsible for each other. You know, the right to worship freely and safely, that right was denied to Sikhs in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. The right to assemble peacefully, that right was denied shoppers in Clackamas, Oregon, and moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado. That most fundamental set of rights to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, fundamental rights that were denied to college students at Virginia Tech, and high school students at Columbine, and elementary school students in Newtown, and kids on street corners in Chicago on too frequent a basis to tolerate it. And all the families who've never imagined that they'd lose a loved one to a bullet. Those rights are at stake. We're responsible. You know, when I visited Newtown last month, I spent some private time with many of the families who lost their children that day. And one was the family of Grace McDonald. Grace's parents are here. Grace was 7 years old when she was struck down. Just a gorgeous, caring, joyful little girl. I'm told she loved pink. She loved the beach. She dreamed of becoming a painter. And so just before I left, Chris, her father, gave me one of her paintings. And I hung it in my private study just off the Oval Office. And every time I look at that painting, I think about Grace. And I think about the life that she lived and the life that lay ahead of her. And most of all, I think about how, when it comes to protecting the most vulnerable among us, we must act now. For Grace. For the 25 other innocent children and devoted educators who had so much left to give. For the men and women in big cities and small towns who fall victim to senseless violence each and every day. For all the Americans who are counting on us to keep them safe from harm. Let's do the right thing. Let's do the right thing for them and for this country that we love so much. Thank you. I'm going to sign these orders.
That's what you heard. That was our president, Barack Obama, yesterday talking about the need for sensible gun control laws. And as I will share with you today, it didn't sound like an outrage, but it is an outrage. It is an absolute outrage. And I'm going to decipher what happened yesterday. I wanted you to hear the whole thing so you could appreciate the argument that I'm about to make now. By the way, that was Gary Moore with Trouble Ain't Far Behind, and this is Lead Stories, and I'm Eutrice Lead. On this Thursday, January the 17th, the day after this nation witnessed the most incredible, in-your-face insult by the President of the United States, suggesting that he's actually doing something grand and great and revolutionary when it's just a tweak. And it's all about pleasing a constituency that will, in fact, hold him accountable and to which he believes he has absolute allegiance. And denying the constituency that he ought to be paying attention to as well. This is not where he has to choose whether you do this or that. It is that this president has chosen to ignore the interests, once again, of African Americans. He has chosen to follow the disgusting habit of deciding that African Americans don't have any particular needs, they don't have any particular rights, and they're not to be spoken to or about as a special constituency. And this is why African Americans have to understand that they are deluding themselves if they think they have a friend in the White House. Now, before the speech, as you know, we talked about how, you know, Joe Biden, the vice president, had been assigned by Barack Obama immediately after the shooting, the mass shooting, the massacre in Newtown, which is what it was. The president visited, as he should have, because it was a tremendous tragedy, and immediately assigned Joe Biden on this special task of making sure that the nation knows he places priority, he says, on weapons of mass destruction. But what he was really saying was, I am placing precedence. I am selecting to respond to this way because I need to show white America that I'm the kind of black guy they could trust. And I need to show them how much allegiance I have to them. Now, make no mistake, and I'm going to be very clear about this. I'm not suggesting for a minute that the horrific circumstances in Newtown didn't deserve priority. Absolutely. Absolutely. I am pointing to a very disturbing pattern on the part of Barack Obama, who repeatedly has disrespected the African American community, which delivered political victory for him, not once, but twice. I'm going to show you how he did that. So, he assigns Biden. And big press, they made a lot of coverage, they got a lot of coverage about it, they made it easy for the media to have access and so forth. But what did you see in those meetings? I commented on it before. They showed you Joe Biden, and in the many groups that he met with, it was an almost white group. If Eric Holder, the Attorney General, wasn't in the room, it would be practically an all-white group. And you're dealing with an issue that affects America? You hold a news conference yesterday to let people know that you're on the ball, you're taking this thing seriously, and you're a man of action. Once again, the cameras pan the room. What do I see? An almost white group. In this day and age, in the United States, with a black president talking about an issue that is supposedly affecting all of America. But it isn't. And he does not mean it to affect all of America. He is concerned about what the white constituency is concerned about. And that is great. That's the way it ought to be. But how come it doesn't happen when black folks make it a point to say this is an issue? We're not in the room. I told you this was a discussion that white America was having with itself. And none other than the president is at the head of the the proceedings. He wants white America to know, you can trust me. I'm a different kind of black guy. I am a Harvard grad, you know. And you can trust me. Well, so he has these 23 executive actions that he's going to take, and now comes a big to-do about, wow, is this unconstitutional? Are we going to have a fight in Congress? And what, you know, even some Republicans have decided they're going to begin the process of impeaching him because he has super exceeded his authority. But it is really a ploy. None of what has happened here, none of all the big conflagration, the big media coverage, none of it is substantive, really. Because if anybody with a brain is looking at what really transpired and the substance of what the president had to offer, they will see that there is no major reform going on here. All that talk about executive action is basically he's going to send out some memos and tell people, hey, you know, get your act together and do this or do that. There is no, in the 23 actions, it's procedural, it's administrative. It is, as I said, consistent with the role the president has decided to assign to himself, which is he is not a reformer, he's a tweaker. And what you saw yesterday was tweaking. And even that, African Americans didn't get. Why am I making it a big deal? Because it is a big deal. It is a big deal. The violence that he is referring to, the violence that he continued to point out in his speech, all had to do with assault weapons and mostly about the anxiety that the white community has begun to feel over the atrocities and the level of carnage. And therefore, it has become a problem in white America. But this has never been a problem until it has become a problem in white America, until white children are dying. It's news to him. He referred to all the places, all the constitutional rights of people interrupted, you know, the classroom and so forth. And the black kids, where does he locate them? On the street corner. You have to pay attention to these things and what they signal. This signals a really serious and disturbing pattern with this president, and I've had it with him on this number. The African American community is entitled to a very different response, and they're not getting a response at all from this president. Don't be fooled. These executive actions have nothing substantive in terms of any reforms or changes, dramatic changes in anything. It's a lot of noise about procedural things, ceremonial things, functional things that he's going to instruct people to do. He's going to instruct them to collect more information. He's going to instruct the Centers of Disease Control for Disease Control to gather more information and do more research. All these things, you know, he's talking about the executive actions and the media, as if they don't have a brain of their own, are covering this thing like something dramatic and monumental has happened here. No. Nothing dramatic or monumental has happened. He wants it to look that way, but nothing dramatic or monumental has happened. Let me tell you when something dramatic and monumental has happened. The Violence Policy Center, which is a nonprofit educational organization that conducts research and public education on violence in America and provides information and analysis to policymakers, journalists, advocates, and the general public, produced a study just last year, January 2011. 2011. Titled, Black Homicide Victimization in the United States. Black Homicide Victimization in the United States. This is an independent organization that conducts the study and makes it readily available. The president is acting as he doesn't have this information at all. Coming from Chicago, as he does, which has one of the highest murder rates. Suddenly, that does not compute in this whole thing about gun control. Here's what I'm reading directly from the study. It says, and pay attention to the words. You know, studies are not normally emotional. They're very clinical. They're very factual. They're very straightforward. But pay attention to the language used in this introduction to the study. America faces a continuing epidemic of homicide among young black males. From 2002 to 2007, the number of black male juvenile homicide victims rose by 31%. The number of young black homicide victims killed by guns rose at an even sharper rate, 54%. You understand these numbers? It continues. The devastation homicide inflicts on black teens and adults is a national crisis. Yet it is all too often ignored outside of affected communities. Devastation, it says. A national crisis, it says. And everybody in every black community knows this and has known it for years and has been talking about it for years and has been seeking some kind of action on this for years. Here's the study again. This study analyzes unpublished supplementary homicide report data for black homicide victimization submitted to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That is one of the reporting agencies that are now going to be further or reminded in Barack Obama's 23 executive orders. The information has always been there. It says, this is the first analysis of the 2008 data on black homicide victims to offer breakdowns of cases in the five states with the highest black homicide victimization rates, and the first to rank the states by the rate of black homicides. Now, what they're saying here, I remind you, this was written in 2011. And it was the first time, according to this study, which is prepared for policymakers and legislators, is the first time they're getting around that to actually analyzing statistics relating to black homicide. which is proof itself that this thing has been simmering on the back burner for all this time. Okay. According to the FBI data, the study says, in 2008, there were 6,841 black homicide victims in the United States. The homicide rate among black victims in the United States was 18.07 per 100,000. For that year, the overall national homicide rate was 4.93 per 100,000. For whites, the national homicide rate was 2.99 per 100,000. This is devastating. This is devastating information. Look at that. The homicide rates for whites, 2.99, let's just say 3 per 100,000. The homicide rates for African Americans was 18 per 100,000. And you mean to tell me this does not compute, not even as a piece of your so-called gun control reforms? Further, the study says, of the 6,841 black homicide victims, 5,876 or 86% were male, and 961 or 14% were female. The homicide rate for black male victims was 32.49 per 100,000. In comparison, the overall rate for male homicide victims was 7.93 per 100,000. For white male homicide victims, it was 4.44 per 100,000. I'll just stop there a minute. Do you understand? Do you understand the disparity here? The average rate nationally is 7.93. That's just across the nation, generally. For black males, it was 32.49. And for white homicide victims, it was 4.44. Do you want to convince me we don't have a problem? And that this has not been a crisis? For homicides in which the weapon used could be identified, 82% of black victims were shot and killed with guns. Of these, 72% were killed with handguns. All right? So you're talking about gun control, but you're talking about assault weapons, because that is what people are concerned about now, the assault weapons. Handguns are what have been killing black folks for years. And you don't know that. Your administration doesn't know that. And you're in office for 5 years. Now, I may sound a little agitated, but what is steaming me here is the idea that this information is not known. And not known by the task force that was assigned to know this information. Because they're not interested in this. These are not real people dying. This is not a concern for the Obama administration. It's just black folks shooting and killing each other. We don't need to pay attention to them because they come from politically impotent communities, communities led by leaders who also haven't a clue as to what they're supposed to do. How could they possibly allow this nation to focus on gun control and not talk about the devastation occurring for years, for decades now, in the African-American community by guns, because these communities are targeted by the manufacturers and they invade the community and just absolutely have them awash in guns. The drug trade, guns. This is a crisis, and this, here's what they say in conclusion. Blacks in the United States are disproportionately affected by homicide. For the year 2008, this is the year that the most recent year there were figures. So they don't even have a discipline of studying these things. It's not important. Blacks represented 13% of the nation's population, yet accounted for 48% of all homicide victims. Now, what else do you need to know that makes you not understand that this is a crisis? This is what a crisis looks like. As noted at the beginning of this study, the devastation homicide inflicts on black teens and adults is a national crisis. This is what they're saying in the report. Not me. This is them in the report. The devastation homicide inflicts on black teens and adults is a national crisis, yet it is all too often ignored outside of affected communities, which means the communities are dealing with this on their own in the best way that they can, minus the input of the federal government and the state government and the local government. The attitude is, you guys, you're on your own. We don't care if you kill each other. We don't care if gun manufacturers are just targeting your communities and letting these guns in. You don't care if the cops are crooked and are also part of the drug and gun problem. We don't have to investigate these things. We are not dealing with your realities. That's the result of your own making, and suffer the consequences of your own making. Government is not here to help you, but the president takes an entirely different tact because it is Newtown, where things like this simply don't happen. And when they do happen, they're such aberrations. They tug at the heart, and there he is, having children with him because he's a concerned parent. And it's for the children. Black children have been dying by the thousands. By the thousands. Black people have been dying by the thousands because of this gun issue, and nobody, not Joe Biden, not the president, not anybody else included in this discussion, not Eric Holder, not anybody, has decided that this is worth paying attention to. The conclusion of the study says, for blacks, like all victims of homicide, guns, usually handguns, are far and away the number one murder tool. Successful efforts to reduce America's black homicide toll must put a focus on reducing access and exposure to firearms. Now, if I could find this study from the Violence Policy Center based on FBI statistics, I think somebody in the Obama administration should be able to. I don't think that this should be a discovery. It is not a discovery for them. It is a deliberate effort not to discover it. So when you get up there and you make all those sounds like the most humane president, after all, the children are dying. Black children in Chicago have been dying, Mr. President. Black children in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Black children in South Philadelphia. Black children all over this country have been dying. And you have come from Chicago with one of the highest murder rates among black children. But you can't figure that out as a problem to be addressed. You make a big ceremony, big thing. You're the man of action. Go, Joe. Let's solve this thing within a month. And boom, here we go. In a month, we have these recommendations that you even willing to take on Congress and sidestep Congress and get legislation through and get things done. And you're willing now to engage in battle. But you're not talking about black children. Let me tell you something. This man, as I said before, is a tweaker. Don't look to Barack Obama to reform anything, to overhaul anything, to utterly destroy things that are not working. He's there as a kind of caretaker. He's following the advice of the Clintonites and Clinton himself. He is devoted to the script. There will be no change, not on this account, not even when independent studies have clearly pointed out a problem that the black community has been wrestling with for decades. The Congressional Black Caucus should have been all over this guy, saying, listen, how could you have these discussions going on and the room is so Wonder Bread white? Latinos are dealing with this. Native Americans are dealing with this. African Americans are dealing with this. So when I speak passionately about this, it's not because I'm making something up out of my head. I read you from the introduction to a study that was formally presented in January of 2011. The information is available. It is now quantified, and it is continuing to have difficulty getting the attention of the people who say they're there to reform things. Well, my time has run out for today. I needed to get this said. This president needs to be brought before the community, and we need to call him out. We need to call him out. Thank you for listening. You can certainly reach me and continue the conversation at leadstories@gmail.com. That's leidstories@gmail.com. And let's talk with each other. And thank you for listening. Coming up next, Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. Thank you for allowing me to get this steam off of my chest. We'll see you tomorrow.